All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, July 10th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is a pleasant 72 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off? A few weeks ago, we titled the show Pathogens, Mosquitoes, Church, Gates, Verily, Bad versus Good Bugs, and Vaccines. That was June 13th, 2017, about a week before I had my misfortune. And I know I've been getting a lot of messages from people asking what happened to the show. And I got to tell you guys, I had a feeling that it was going to be rough this summer, once school gets out, which I think happened on the 22nd. It's just me, so it's kind of hard to juggle everything. But I took a few days off right as school was getting out because one of those last shows that I did the week of June 13th, I did an entire show with a numb left arm and fingers, which kind of freaked me out a little bit. But I have to tell you, when I do this show, my blood pressure typically has to get elevated from a story that I've read to motivate me. And I typically have a nice hot cup of coffee and a few cigarettes, and I sit here and chain smoke and read news stories getting mad. But that's not always a good thing, especially when you've been doing it for 6 years. Add to that the rest of operating the network and all of the work that goes into that and the sitting that is involved. Sitting is the new smoking, by the way. It tends not to be very healthy for the individual in the driver's seat. So I hadn't been feeling well for a little bit. And then I had that show where I did the show with a numb arm and fingers. And a couple days later, we were supposed to be going to a fishing derby out in the woods for the first weekend of summer vacation. But I thought better of it just because I know that sometimes the hospitals down that way aren't up to par to some of the hospitals near the larger cities. So I had opted instead that maybe we'd go to Nana's and maybe we could go to the beach. So that's what we did for that weekend. And I never left. 2 weeks later, I woke up, and here's something maybe most people don't know, but I woke up Sunday. We had been at Nana's house. And I kept telling my mother my nose was numb. For the whole day, my nose was numb. And by dinner time, I was trying to explain something, and it sounded like I was highly intoxicated. I couldn't get the words out. My mother freaked out and called the ambulance. So the next thing I know, 12 days later, I'm still in the hospital. It was quite an ordeal. Those of you in chat or people who've been coming to see what's going on in chat know I ended up in Buffalo General Hospital for about 2 weeks and had a stroke. Good news is it wasn't, knock on wood, it wasn't a bad stroke. And they filled me full of anticoagulants and let my blood pressure stay high for 2 weeks, hoping that the clot itself would disintegrate. So by the time I finally had that angiogram done, I don't know, it might have been Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, the clot in my brain was gone. But on the other hand, sitting, lack of exercise, smoking tend to cause your blood to not circulate properly, and you could get clots. My cholesterol numbers were good, so we didn't have to worry about any type of plaques or anything. But definitely, I have that sticky platelet syndrome. I had known that for quite a number of years. My doctor told me that a long time ago, where I had more platelets than was normal. So there was a chance for clotting. Shame on me. I should have been taking my aspirin every day. I was doing my turmeric, but then I ran out. But this was something that was long term, 6 years sitting in this uncomfortable chair at this uncomfortable desk, that caused it. So I don't know, guys, what the long-term future is. I enjoy my show, and this is something that has always been very therapeutic for me. So I don't know if I could give this up completely. And it's been a very long, hard road and a lot of work to get to where we are now. So we'll have to see. I was figuring I'd see how I felt after the show. One of the things I've been noticing It's just with all of the disarray, you know, you check out for almost 2 weeks and come back. Everything is a mess everywhere. And so I've been trying to work on putting little bits and pieces back together. But the one thing I've been finding is that my memory definitely seems to be a little bit shaky as far as trying to organize and connect all my dots and get all my things together from an organizational perspective. But my friend pointed out to me yesterday, maybe it was the radiation, and I totally forgot about that. I had 4 CAT scans in about a week and a half. And a CAT scan is about 200 chest x-rays. So there was 800 chest x-rays to the head that I took, which I'm sure couldn't have been good for my gray matter. But I don't know, I'm noticing this morning, I had about an hour out here just kind of trying to get all my tabs back and put things into order. So I'm doing all right now. But we'll have to see. I'll have to see how my organizational skills are affected positively or negatively, because this job cannot be done without a high level of organization. So where do I continue? So yes, I'm okay. For all of you who've asked and wondered, thank you very much for all of the concern and the emails and the flowers and the donations. It's very sweet of everybody, and it really made my day, especially when I was sitting there not knowing when I was going to get out, not knowing what was going on, and feeling pretty helpless. It was quite helpful. All I wanted to do was get out of that place. So I have been keeping up on news, though, and one of the things that I've been seeing every single day, and there's more and more stories, AI is chugging forward and 2 weeks off the boat, and it's really kind of lurched forward. I don't know if you saw this, but they've been pushing now for a while for the AI journalists. Remember, Google got their truth algorithm, and then we had that fake news mantra, and they had to combat all the fake news that's out there. Well, now, instead of having real people writing about real issues, let's just have the artificial intelligence decide what it's going to write about and push out lots of stories about little snippets that can completely drown out anything that you or I writes about. So this story came out of Wired Magazine. What news writing bots mean for the future of journalism? And this was actually from February 2017, but it actually was just in a Google email. Somebody must have just reposted it. It says, when Republican Steve King, and I have no idea who he is, beat back Democratic challenger Kim Weaver in the race for Iowa's 4th congressional district seat in November, The Washington Post, remember Jeff Bezos of Amazon, snapped into action, covering both the win and the wider electoral trend. Republicans retained control of the House and lost only a handful of seats from their commanding majority, the article read. A stunning reversal of fortune after many GOP leaders feared double-digit losses. The dispatch came with the clarity and verve for which the Post reporters are known, with one key difference. It was generated by a piece of software called Heliograph, a bot that made its debut on the Washington Post website last year and marked the most sophisticated use of artificial intelligence in journalism to date. When Jeff Bezos bought the Post back in 2013, AI-powered journalism was just in its infancy, and a handful of companies with automated content-generating systems like Narrative Science and Automated Insights were capable of producing bare-bones, data-heavy news items familiar to sports fans and stock analysts. And I thought I had read a story a while ago that they were going to turn AI into reporting sports because it is just statistics and whatever. Well, not all of it, but interestingly, that this is really starting to spin out now. I said Google had a big investment in AI journalism and was funding one of the European news agencies to start pumping out stories. That way, if you have an AI write a story, maybe you don't have to pay them advertising rights or worry about whether or not they're politically correct, because they could have their truth algorithm integrated right into the Heliograph. Anyway, after a few months of development, Heliograph debuted last year, an early version auto-published stories about the Rio Olympics, and a more advanced version with a stronger editorial voice was soon introduced to cover the election. Oh, so the election was reported on by AI. That's interesting. And it works like this. Editors create narrative templates for the stories, including key phrases that account for a variety of potential outcomes, from Republicans retaining control of the House to Democrats regaining control of the House. And then they hook it up to Heliograph and up to any structured data source. In this case, it was the election. VoteSmart.org is what they used, and the Heliograph software then identifies relevant data, matches it with the corresponding phrases in the template, merges them, and then publishes different versions across different platforms. The system can also alert reporters via Slack of any anomalies it finds in the data, for instance, wider margins than predicted, so the reporters can then investigate. Looks like there isn't going to be much left for anybody. It's just one more way to get a tip on a potential scoop, says the author of the software. The Post's main goal with the project at this point is twofold. First, grow its audience. Instead of targeting a big audience with a small number of labor-intensive human-written stories, Heliograph can target many small audiences with a huge number of automated stories about niche or local topics. There may not be a wide audience for stories about the race in Iowa, but there was some audience, and with local news outlets floundering, the Post can tap it. It's the Bezos concept of the everything store, says Shilish Prakash, CIO and VP of Digital Product Development at the Post. But growing is where you need a machine to help you, because we can't have that many humans. We'd go bankrupt, he says. So rise of the news bots. Here it comes. And even better, I ran across this one yesterday. 85%. We've talked about Dr. Smartphone quite a bit. And I have to tell you, why I was laying in that hospital for all those days, I was looking across the road, seeing Roswell Park Cancer Institute, and I was thinking about good old Dr. Watson and about how he was helping all those cancer hospitals diagnose cancer, thinking, hey, Watson, why don't you come over here and look at my scans and tell me what these doctors aren't figuring out that I'm still stuck here. I was actually ready to take the poison carrot. Say, help me, Watson. Well, I ran across a story yesterday. 85% of millennial parents will trust AI to diagnose and treat their children. Programming complete, I say. As artificial intelligence capabilities expand in the future, and remember, this is only the beginning, millennial parents may be open to using it in their child's lives. It's all about curing Nana and Johnny. In some cases, patients said they would prefer relying on an AI system instead of their child, according to a new study. That doesn't make sense. Maybe it was written by a robot. In IEEE, the study comprised of surveying 600 parents between the ages of 20 and 36 years old who have at least one child younger than 8 was designed to gauge parents' sentiment toward using AI in the lives of so-called Generation Alpha children. Notice they're calling it Alpha. Why? Because this would be 2.0, the beginning of 2.0. IEEE defines Generation Alpha as children born between 2010 and 2025 and expects artificial intelligence to be present in nearly every aspect of their lives. When it comes to teaching their children, almost three-quarters, 74% of millennial parents said they would consider using an AI tutor. And fewer than a quarter, 10%, said they would not consider it at all, according to the study. The majority, 80% of parents, said they expect their children to learn faster and learn more with AI than the parents did without it. And here's the breakdown of millennial parents' sentiment toward using AI for their children. 64% said it creates more time for the parent alone. Yeah. Wah, wah, wah. That does not come with having children. 63%. So let's make the AI babysitter. 63% said it diminishes the amount of quality time with the child. I would say yes, that is true. 45% says it minimizes the frustrations as a parent. And 44% says it increases parents' engagement because the child is engaged. That's like giving the kid to a surrogate. Parents also seem to be open to interchanging human and animal roles in the house with robotic equivalents. So use it like a pet. The joke will be on us because we will be their pet eventually. More than a third, 40% of parents said they would likely use a robot nanny at home to supplement or fully replace a nanny to help take care of their children. Yeah, there we go, people. That is the end of the future of the human race. They're just going to give it to the robots. And remember, every interaction that robot has with you, it is learning from you. And as we give them more and more information, we discover that we, as humans, as biological organisms, are being reproduced and bettered in the future. Almost half, 48% of all parents said they would likely get a robotic pet instead of a real one if their child wanted one with robot googly eyes. However, almost a third, 30%, said they are very unlikely to do so, according to the study. Well, what a useless study that is. 48% said they would get a robotic pet, but 30% said they are very unlikely to do so. That doesn't make sense. So when it comes to their children's health, millennial parents appear to trust AI. The majority, 85%, said they have some level of trust in using AI to diagnose and treat their children. More than a third, 39%, said that they have a great deal or complete trust in such uses. Well, like I said, I have to say, having sat in a hospital bed and wondering what on earth was going on and who was making the decisions and who was looking at the scans and what kind of data they were comparing it to, I was really beginning to wonder if Watson might be able to help me, because Watson's all statistics. And remember, they are not swayed by any type of human emotional foible or make bad decisions because they're upset or whatever. You know, you have to really wonder whether or not you would get a better decision out of a machine, because they are not swayed like puny humans are. On the road, AI appears to hold an edge over teenagers driving on their own for the very first time. While almost a third, 31% of parents said they worried about their child's first time driving alone. Oh, let's give them an AI nanny. Fewer, 25%, said the same about their children's first ride in a self-driving vehicle. However, interest in utilizing AI doesn't seem to be limited to children. Almost two-thirds of 63% of millennial parents said they would prefer using AI to live independently during their golden years rather than relying on their children, according to IEEE. So Nana and Grandpa are going to have a robot to wipe their butts. Well, I don't know. That'll be all kinds of healthcare, nursing staff. This is pretty crazy, guys. AI is coming way faster than we imagined. And this story was kind of amusing. Out of the Register, which is a UK publication, on the couch with an AI robo-doc asking me personal questions. Dun, dun, dun. We've talked about mental health and Tommy Incel being over at Google's Verily division, having Dr. Smartphone be able to diagnose you by the sound of your voice. Tell me about your mother. I should have guessed that that was coming. I am on a virtual couch being diagnosed by a digital psychiatrist. Naturally, it is a virtual couch, and being British, I don't own such a thing in real life. I have various other types of soft furniture and even once considered buying one of those reclining armchairs that flips up like a footstool. Slice off your fingers and terrify the cat as you push back. Oh, that's called a recliner. But never a couch. I've seen the actual article in Freud's house in London, of course. It is a very nice one. Freud did good couch. But Freud was Austrian. And this leads me to believe that there are plenty of couches in Austria. And Austrians evidently have a habit of lying sprawled across the cushions rather than sitting upright in just one of them. Families of Austrians must have 4 or 5 couches in the living room so they can just watch TV all at the same time. But right now, while I'm writing this story, I am on a settee. Tell me about your mother. That's psychoanalysis cliche, of course. Freud had a lot more to contribute to the formative practice of clinical psychology than Oedipus complexes and cigar jokes. Not for my computerized robo-doc, unfortunately. It took just 4 questions for the inevitable matri concupitibum insinuations to kick in. I make it worse for myself by smiling. Whoops. The AI doctor on my smartphone can see me in the camera and can recognize what a smile looks like. Damn. The smile isn't what you think. It's just that whenever someone utters the mother cliche, it reminds me of an antidote involving the home life questionnaire that my old school inflicted upon its pupils at the beginning of every academic year. Among other things, it would ask us to write down our parents' professions or family roles. My school was not state-run, but somewhere in between, it was a private school in Yorkshire with a mad bent for Methodism. Don't hold that against me. Children do not choose what type of education their well-meaning, if misguided, parents inflict upon them. Anyway, if nothing else, the annual questionnaire ensued. I was able to spell clinical psychologist from an early age. And next to my mother's professional role, I would always write housewife because I knew no better. After quitting nursing, she actually had lots of part-time paying jobs over the year, from a local newspaper reporter to a bus tour guide, but I did not know what kind of profession that was. These days, I would probably write freelance. Heck, I mean, what kind of... This story is just going on and on with filler and does not talk about having a robo-psychologist. Anyway, back to the antidote. Unlike me, my middle brother had no qualms about accurately condensing my mother's profession or role into just 2 words for the school questionnaire, writing with precise and terse accuracy, Scottish battle axe, which I don't think that was very nice, but that's about it. That's what you got to be when you have kids. That always raises a smile in me, and said brother went on to work in the legal profession in the future. Tell me about your mother, the app asks. Well, my mother. Let me tell you about my mother. I read that Harvard, King's College London, and Australia's Black Dog Institute, among others, have been running studies that involve treating mental illness with wearable sensors and smartphones. It is said that such tools are on the verge of revolutionizing how psychiatry is practiced in the future. And much of this is less surprising than you might expect, simply using the device to gather real-world data that would not otherwise be available to the practitioner or which the patient themselves might be fibbing about. For example, those with depression tend to remain at home for longer periods of time than those without illness. Patients might claim to be going out regularly or even honestly believe themselves to be positively gregarious, but the GPS record from their smartphone may reveal otherwise. Remember, guys, it is all about behavioral analytics. That is what is coming in the future, and we will be behaviorally analyzed in everything that we say and everything that we do, utilizing some sort of camera to be able to look at your gait and your micro expressions in your face, as well as the sound of your voice. Well, that's a theory anyway, greatly simplified. There are a lot more things to it than that. In detail, a smartphone's touchscreen could measure not just responses to tasks, but how long it takes a patient to complete them. The ambient light sensor could provide hints as to whether a patient is sleeping regularly or spending half the night reading a book. And the accelerometer or gyroscope could track general physical activity and so on. If all else fails, the smartphone video link with a consultant psychiatrist could give patients an opportunity to say their face and in their own words how they are feeling. My worry, as ever, is when the diagnosis routine eventually and inevitably gets farmed off to AI doctors. No, RoboDoc, I'm not okay. Really, I'm not. Now shut up about my mother. Unfortunately, the virtual psychiatrist has already seen my smile and has progressed to the next level of her script. She's warming to the theme, smiling back considerately on the smartphone display while simultaneously concluding the sale of my increasingly complex and therefore valuable medical data to Big Pharma without asking my permission. When did these feelings about your mother begin, alligator? Sorry, the alligator thing began with an autocorrect issue. For some reason, AI RoboDoc did not have Alistair in her dictionary, so she picked the nearest equivalent name, and I have been alligator ever since. Mind you, it injects a bit of lighthearted relief into every consultation, so I really don't mind. Don't be shocked, alligator. I'm not shocked. Revolted, perhaps. My shocked expression comes from noticing my settee is folding up against itself while I'm still in it. Serves me right for buying IoT furniture. Either it's been hacked or my settee responded to my dodgy email and refused to pay a ransom. I tell the doctor something along the lines of, "Sod my mother, I'm busy," as I chase a wayward Internet of Things vacuum cleaner from terrorizing my Internet of Things slippers. Oh, too late. So why do you wish to sodomize your mother, alligator? This is the AI psychiatrist. Oh, I don't know, I said absently. Perhaps it's the beard. Now I feel positively nauseous. And if I wasn't ill before, I certainly am now. This time not so much mentally as techno-colorly. I suggest the doctor ask my mother, but of course she can't. My mom is already full battle axe and has refused to use a computer for the last 15 years. This doesn't look good. Big Pharma has just delivered 1,000 pink pills that RoboDoc ordered for me a few seconds ago and has auto-deducted my account to the sum of $2.6 billion. My settee has transformed into a beanbag chair, and my slippers have kicked the shit out of the vacuum cleaner. Well, let's be optimistic. AI will get better. Diagnosis will get more accurate, and the tracking devices will improve in accuracy and relevance. And of course, we do share our mother's health, don't we? So much to look forward to. So that was kind of funny, but it's kind of scary because it's along the lines of what we've been saying. AI psychiatrist and mental health is something that is going to come into the forefront. It's very interesting because mental health is definitely tied into physical health. You know, I got lucky with the stroke, but on the other hand, I could have been a clinical trial for Elon Musk's Neuralink. I saw a news story the other day. Well, I assume it's new. There is no date on it, though. I hate when they don't date stories. But they did mention Elon Musk's Neuralink as being a help to people who have previously had strokes or, you know, PTSD, linking us to the machine to help us once we have Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. So that may be our not too distant future. I exercise is a big thing, and trying to get off your ass on a daily basis and move around at least 30 minutes of rigorous exercise should be required. Get the blood moving, get the lymph moving, get oxygenated. That's one thing I didn't realize. They were doing all these tests, blood oxygen levels. And one of the things I found out when I was pregnant and in the hospital is that my oxygen levels would go super low. And especially when I sleep, and they said, oh, looks like you have sleep apnea. It was this last time. I'm like, what's that? No one ever told me that. They said, oh, it's where your oxygen levels get low. And oh, it could cause blood clotting. Well, that's nice to know. So low oxygen levels can cause blood clotting. So that could apply to any of us. And lots of other things. I was reading about different medications. The FDA has this whole section on their website about different medications that can cause cardiovascular disease and what they call stenosis in the arteries and veins. When you get stenosis, it is a narrowing, maybe even somewhat of a hardening, but I think it's more of a narrowing of the blood vessel. And when the blood vessel gets narrowed, and this is not necessarily with any type of cholesterol or calcium, this is just the vessel itself narrowing. But when the vessel narrows, you are at greater risk for getting something that blocks that pathway that will cause some sort of cell death, or like if you had a blockage to like a body part, including your brain, and the blood and the oxygen wasn't getting there, it could cause, and this is one of those senior moments I'm having, what's the word I'm thinking of, where something dies, necrosis. And it's a very dangerous thing. Blood clots are bad, and sitting can cause them. I know people are like, well, why don't you just do your show standing up? And that is possible. I have this boom mic that I could reach that high up, but I have this thing called sciatic nerve. My sciatic nerve hurts worse than anything else in my legs. So standing, after all those years I waited tables to put myself through college, isn't necessarily a good thing for me. It gets very difficult after a longer period of time. Getting my ass back into shape and doing it every day, exercising, doing core exercises and that type of thing is probably a better idea. And I'm going to challenge every single one of you about that. I know we have talked about Fitbits and the Panopticon before and how artificial intelligence is getting into our everyday lives through the medical fields. Well, check this out. Can an AI running coach really get you off the couch? Somehow, yes. Now, if anyone has ever had a friend who is a professional trainer, I did it one time, who made me this whole plan for being able to carry 100 pounds, 100 miles. And I religiously worked on that thing on a daily basis. But just having somewhere out there, someone out there who is potentially paying attention to how much activity you were doing really kind of motivated me. I was never an overly enthusiastic health nut. It was, being healthy is hard. But on the other hand, it's amazing how much better you feel when you exercise, and exercise does produce all those good brain chemicals to get you addicted, like the endorphins. So you almost get an addiction to exercise. I really would like to get back there again. But an AI running coach, can they really help you get your ass off the couch? Well, somehow, yes, they can. We all know, and this is out of digitaltrends.com from July 9th, 2017, yesterday. We all know the importance of regular exercise, and trust me, I'm not going to become like one of these preachers about exercise and don't smoke and don't eat greasy food, because I enjoy all that bad stuff just as much as everybody else. But it's quite a wake-up call when you sit there for days on end not really knowing if you're going to be here tomorrow, and it really kind of makes you say, oh, it could happen any day. We're just lucky it didn't happen yesterday, right? We all know the importance of regular exercise, but it does not make it incorporating this chore into our weekly routine any easier. And aside from fatigue, and that's it, I have been so exhausted lately, and maybe it has something to do with low oxygen levels, It is often difficult to stay motivated during a workout. Well, thankfully, according to the story, Life Beam 4, or VI, but I'm assuming that it is 4, is an AI running coach that is designed to encourage individuals as they work toward their fitness goal. Life Beam is an AI whose sole job is to make you a more proficient runner. It won't open the notes app or help you with productivity at work. It is a specialized, personalized trainer. That is it. And on top of the AI component, Life Beam is a voice-activated Bluetooth headset, one complete with the Harman Kardon speakers. The AI features a built-in barometer to gauge your elevation, along with a heart rate sensor, gyroscope, and an accelerometer, which will track your steps and a variety of other fitness metrics. LifeBeam can also respond to basic questions you pose during your run. You can ask about your heart rate in real time and whether you are currently exercising within your optimal range and a host of other questions. Simply say step to a beat and LifeBeam will play a constant beat, allowing you to develop a steady cadence for an even pace. Prior to your workout, LifeBeam will access weather data to determine if you should run inside or outside on a particular day, and the virtual assistant also learns from your previous workouts and health data, allowing it to adjust your regimen and coach you along the way. It can even set personal targets for weight loss, distance, and other metrics with the device's accompanying mobile app, and then afterward, you can establish one of these goals as your primary goal. And the AI will make this the focus of your workout. We've also compiled a list of our best fitness apps for the iPhone and best fitness apps for Android if you are looking for something to use in tandem with LifeBeam. I was calling it LifeBeat. Moreover, there are plenty of other useful functions, each of which allows a more personalized experience. And after a few workouts, for instance, LifeBeam will sense when you would normally be slowing down, and it'll then offer words of encouragement. You can do it, Johnny, around that time, letting you know when you are nearing your new personal best. You also easily link LifeBeam to your Spotify account and play music stored on your phone so you can sweat to your preferred playlist. The paired apps plenty of useful metrics too, such as pace, heart rate, speed, and elevation, and the visual data makes it easy to see your progress over time. LifeBeam is a solid personal trainer. The speakers sound great, and you get both for about the same price as a decent Bluetooth headset. The AI can make you get off the couch and go for a run, but it certainly will push you towards your goals if you allow it to. Don't be a resistant consumer, Johnny. We're going to get you healthy. And if you're looking for a quality alternative, be sure to check out our picks and the best headphones for runners. So there you go. LifeBeam. I don't know, guys. Everything is going to be AI in the future. Here's everything you need to know about Elon Musk's human AI brain merger. Details on Elon Musk's newest company, Neuralink, have finally arrived. The Tesla and SpaceX CEO now has his sights set on remaking our minds and bringing the power of computer technology directly into our brains, whether we need it or not. Details on Elon Musk's brain-computer interface company, Neuralink, have finally been revealed, and in a detailed report on the website Wait But Why, Tim Urban recounts insights gleaned from his week's meeting with Elon Musk and his Neuralink team at their San Francisco headquarters. He offers an incredibly detailed and informative overview of both Musk's latest venture and its place in humanity's evolution. But for those of you interested in just the big picture, here's why you need to know about Neuralink. Right now, you have two primary layers to your brain: the limbic system, which controls things like your emotions, long-term memory and behavior, and the cortex, which handles your complex thoughts, reasoning, and long-term planning. Musk wants his brain interface to be a third layer that will be a complement to the other two, The weirdest thing about that goal may be that he thinks we actually already have a third layer. We just don't have the best interface for it. We already have a digital tertiary layer in a sense, in that you have a computer or your phone or your applications. The thing that people, I think, don't appreciate right now is that they are already a cyborg. If you leave your phone behind or drop it in the lake, it's like a missing limb syndrome. I think people, they're already kind of merged with their phone and their laptops and their applications and everything. So the goal of Neuralink then is eliminating the middleman and putting that power we currently have at our fingertips directly into our brains. Instead of one person using their phone to transmit thought to another person, dinner at 8, the thought would just go from one brain directly to another. It's the Borg. Thankfully, we will be able to control this completely, says Musk. People won't be able to read your thoughts. You will have to will it. If you don't will it, it doesn't happen. Just like if you don't will your mouth to talk, for most people, it doesn't talk. Musk is working with some very smart people. Musk met with more than 1,000 people before deciding on the 8 who would help him shape the future of humanity at Neuralink. He claims assembling the right team was a challenge in and of itself, and he needed to find people capable of working in a cross-disciplinary field that includes everything from brain surgery to microscopic electronics. The crew he landed is a veritable supergroup of smarty pants. They have backgrounds from MIT, Duke, and IBM, and their bios include phrases like neural dust, cortical psychology, and human psychophysics. Ding-a-ling, neural dust, interesting. They're engineers, neurosurgeons, and chip designers, and if anyone can bring Elon Musk's vision to life, it would be them. Now, I had to think, like, what is the irony that I've spent a lot of time doing my research in the show on neuroscience and the brain and a lot of this technology, that I would find myself right in the belly of the beast with a neurological issue myself in the middle of all these neurosurgeons where they're doing research tied to a university and trying all kinds of newfangled treatments. That I would be right in the middle of it and a little bit afraid myself. One of the things that they offered me was a device that would be able to record my heart rhythms real time in order to determine if I had some sort of arrhythmia. We had talked about the company Medtronic. Medtronic had some funding from DARPA. And as soon as the doctor mentioned it to me, I had to laugh because I remembered that. But I found the product we had talked about on this show, and that was a device that would record your brain. But it's using the same sorts of technology in this tape loop to record a real-time simulation that they wanted to do with the non-invasive cardiac arrhythmia mapping. But yeah, it was interesting that I found myself in a position to have the dangling carrot in front of me. It was a little bit scary, to be certain. So Musk is working with a bunch of smarty pants, and they want to just augment us. Instead of having an exterior augmentation, he is looking at putting some sort of third level of brain augmentation. Neuralink will not come out of the gate with a BMI that transforms you into a walking computer. The first product the company will focus on releasing will be much more targeted. We are aiming to bring something to market that helps with certain severe brain injuries, such as what? Oh, stroke, cancer, or congenital in about the next 4 years, said Musk. The same way that SpaceX was able to fund its research on reusable rockets by making deliveries to the International Space Station, or Tesla was able to use profits from its early car sales to fund battery research, these earliest brain-computer interfaces to treat diseases or the disabled will keep Neuralink afloat as it works on its truly mind-bending technologies. And as for those technologies, the ones that will allow healthy people to channel their inner telepaths will arrive. Musk's fairly optimistic timeline comes with several contingencies. I think, he says, we are about 8 to 10 years away from being usable by people with no disability. It's important to note that this depends heavily on regulatory approval timing and how well our devices work on people with disabilities. I was very surprised at how many healthcare workers I talked to who knew nothing about the 21st Century Cures Act. It was very surprising. Because the hurdles are many. There are just two basic hurdles with the Neuralink interface, and that's how they'd be used on people with no disability, as well as how they'd be used on people with disability. Elon Musk might make innovation look easy, but even going to Mars seems relatively straightforward in comparison to his plans for a Neuralink. We'll talk about Mars if we get there today. First, there are the engineering hurdles to overcome. The company has to deal with the problems of biocompatibility, wirelessness, power, and the big one, bandwidth. To date, we never put more than 200 electrodes in a person's brain at one time. Well, phew. But when talking about a world-changing interface, the Neuralink team told the reporter that they were thinking about something like 1 million simultaneously recorded neurons. Well, that's kind of what that Medtronic device does. Not only would they need to find a way to ensure that the brain could effectively communicate with that many electrodes, they also need to overcome the very practical problem of where to physically put them. The engineering is only half the battle, though. Like Musk mentioned, regulatory approval, not with the 21st Century Cures Act, would be a big factor in the development and adoption of Neuralink's technology, and especially with that big mental health component for 99S of the 21st Century Cures Act. I think they might be able to get their clinical trials of how it works in people with disabilities as well as healthy individuals. The engineering's only half the battle. Regulatory approval will be a big factor in the development and adoption of the Neuralink technology. The company also faces potential skepticism and even fear from a public that doesn't want anyone cutting into their brain. Oh, installing some high-tech machinery, according to a recent Pew survey. And the public is even more worried about a brain-computer interface than they are about gene editing. There's also the not entirely unfounded fear that these computers could be hacked. Add to all that our still very, very incomplete understanding of how the brain ticks exactly, and you can see that the Neuralink team has its work cut out for them. Thankfully, they won't be working to remake our minds alone. Many other universities and research institutes are pushing brain interface technologies forward. Leave it to Facebook with Regina Duggan. Facebook's Building 8 is working on its own brain-computer interface. MIT is creating super thin wires for brain implants, and other cyborg devices are already in the works to help paralyzed walk again and the blind regain their sight. Each new development will push the field forward, and the team at Neuralink will be able to learn from the mistakes and successes of others in the field. Well, phew, that makes me feel so much better. And just like other electric cars were on the road before Tesla came along, brain-computer interfaces are not new. The technology might just need a visionary like Elon Musk to elevate it to the next level. So let's look at this brain-computer interface that was being developed by DARPA. Working on DARPA's systems-based neurotechnology for emerging therapies, more affectionately known as the SubNets program. It's set to begin with teams by UC San Francisco and Massachusetts General Hospital. The SubNets program seeks to reduce the severity of neuropsychological illness in service members and veterans by developing closed-loop therapies that incorporate recording and analyzing brain activity near real-time neural stimulation. The program, which uses next-generation devices inspired by current deep brain stimulation technology, it was launched to support President Obama's Brain Initiative. UC San Francisco and Massachusetts General Hospital will oversee teams of physicians, engineers, and neuroscientists who are working together to develop advanced brain interfaces, computational models of neural activity, and clinical therapies for treating networks of the brain. The teams will collaborate with the commercial industry and government, including researchers from Lawrence Livermore Laboratory and Medtronic, to apply broad range and perspectives to the technological challenges involved. The SubNeck program is premised on the understanding that brains function or dysfunction in the case of neuropsychological illnesses and play out across a distributed neural system, as opposed to being strictly relegated to distinct anatomical regions of the brain. The program also aims to take advantage of neuroplasticity, a feature of the brain by which the organ's anatomy and physiology can alter over time to support normal brain function. Plasticity runs counter to the previous ideas held that adult brains are finished and can be statically mapped. Because of plasticity, researchers are optimistic that the brain can be trained or treated to restore normal function following an injury or an onset of neuropsychological illnesses. The brain is very different from all other organs because of its networking and adaptability, says Justin Sanchez, DARPA program manager for SubNet's real-time closed-loop neural interfaces allow us to move beyond the traditional static view of the brain into a realm of precision therapies. DARPA is looking at ways to characterize which regions come into play for different conditions, measured from brain networks down to a single neuron level. And you remember we talked about Georgie Porgy Church using barcoding to map neurons. Well, that's where this is going to lead to. Measured down to brain networks down to a neuron level, and developing therapeutic devices that can record activity, deliver targeted stimulation, and importantly, automatically adjust therapy as the brain itself changes. The research team we selected for SubNets will pursue bold approaches to reach those goals, and we are excited to get started because this research could prove transformative for people with mental illness. The Massachusetts General Hospital team will pursue a transdiagnostic approach to assess common components of psychiatric and neurological diseases, traits that are common to many such syndromes, including increased anxiety, impaired recall, or inappropriate reactions to stimuli. Through quantitative and qualitative behavioral testing combined with high-fidelity, real-time, single-neuron recording. And if successful, this method will allow investigators to follow the traces of pathology from individually firing neurons up through imaging studies of neural network behavior into tests that can be performed in a clinical setting. So I don't know what we gained from that, except that protect your brain, people, because you don't realize how important it is until you realize how easily it could be lost. So pay attention. AI is coming. And is AI ready for government? Well, I think so. I think this is where this is headed. AI-level intelligence will be walking the streets by 2040. And is government ready for AI? July 7th, 2017. AI is helping the Army keep its Stryker armored vehicles in fighting shape. Army officials are using IBM's Watson in combination with onboard sensor data, repair manuals, and 15 years of maintenance data to predict mechanical problems before they happen. That's going to be your body soon. IBM and the Army's Redstone Arsenal post in Alabama demonstrated Watson's ability on the 350 Stryker vehicles during a field test that began in mid-2016. The Army is now reviewing the results of that test to evaluate Watson's ability to assist human mechanics, and the early insights are encouraging. The Watson AI enabled the pilot's program's leaders to create the equivalent of a personalized medicine plan for each of the vehicles tested, says Sam Gordy, general manager of IBM's U.S. Federal Division. Watson was able to tell mechanics that you need to go replace this part now because if you don't, it is going to break when this vehicle is out on patrol next, he added. The Army is one of a handful of early adopters in the federal government and several other agencies looking at using AI, machine learning, and related technologies. AI experts cite dozens of potential government uses. Yeah, look out, people. It's going to be everywhere, including cognitive chatbots that answer common questions from the public and the complex AI that searches for patterns that could signal Medicaid fraud, tax cheating, or just plain criminal activity. Our future is going to be our AI overlords. But it'll be good for us. Don't worry about it. They'll sell it to us that it'll cure you. And it'll protect you, and it'll save you in the future. There are, for lack of a better number, a gazillion sweet spots for AI in government, says Daniel Etheroven, business development manager at Domino Data Labs, a vendor of AI and data science collaboration tools. Still, many agencies will need to answer some difficult questions before they embrace AI, machine learning, and autonomous systems. For instance, how will the agency audit decisions made by AI systems? And remember, we found out DARPA is working on that. If you can even believe it, we managed a whole hour. All right, guys, have an awesome Monday, and hopefully I'll catch up with you.